afternoon, everyone. Today's agenda is one bill, House Bill 2549. So we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2549 and ask Representative Richardson to come forward along with Director Shetterly of the LCD. Wonderful to see you two
together.
Full time, sir. That's right. You got the short seat, too. Good afternoon, Representative Richardson.
Good afternoon, Chair Girard, members of the committee. I'm Dennis Richardson, state legislator for Southern Oregon District 4. And I'm before the committee today to present and encourage the passage of House Bill 2549, which has become known as the Oregon's Law of Record Bill. And it is kind of a redraft of last session's House Bill 3315. And basically, to give you just a little bit of background, in recent decades, a number of private citizens in Oregon have bought parcels with the intent of eventually building a home for a retirement home or whatever. And then subsequent to the purchase of their property, there have been changes in zoning laws or state enforcement of land use laws in a way that now deprives them of the right to build the home that they could have built when they built, when they purchased their property. To help rectify the past land use abuses, on November 3rd, 2004, the vast majority of Oregon voters passed Measure 37. Now, 4 months have passed since that time, and there are many average citizens who are wondering when they're going to be able to have the benefit of the changes that were hoped to be reached by passing Measure 37. Now, as we all know, Measure 37 has many complicated and complex issues, and House Bill 2549 is designed merely as a response that will solve a problem for a small group of Oregon landowners, those that had the right to build their home and then lost that right without hearings, without due process, without notice, without just compensation. It just was taken from them. And so this is a very limited bill that would allow a landowner the right to build the home on the land that he acquired but subsequently lost that right because of changing in land use laws. To be a little more specific on the bill itself, House Bill 2549 is designed to authorize the issuing of permits and construction of a single family dwelling on land that was purchased, as I say, and when that right existed at the time that the property was acquired. The property owner is seeking, he would seek to build his home with the same permit process, the same siting requirements, the same requirements as far as septic systems and all of the other requirements that would apply to anyone else building their home. It merely gives them the opportunity to receive the permits so that their home can be constructed. The dwelling must comply with all safety factors and other building requirements. So in a nutshell, that is what this bill is about. It's very limited in its scope, but it's very needed, and it will send to the citizens of Oregon a message that we as a legislature have heard their voice in voting for Measure 37, and although there are many complex parts of the consequences of that bill which are going to take time to resolve, that for this one area of the population who had the right to build a home and then lost it through no fault of their own, they now would be able to build that home that they could have built when they purchased the property.
So the many people that might have filed or may contemplate filing a 37 claim for this specific purpose could use House Bill 2549 and not file a 37 claim, would not have to worry about waivers, would not have to worry about neighbors from the standpoint they'd simply be building what they wanted to originally. Is that correct?
That is correct, and they also won't have to worry about counties that say, well, you can build, but you're going to have to take it down when you sell the property, or that a subsequent owner would not be able to purchase the property in its improved state with the dwelling on it. We've dealt with that. Once a person has qualified under the law that is contemplated by House Bill 2549, and they build their house there, that it is not a non-conforming use. It is just a home on a piece of property that they can live in, that they can sell, they can do what they want like they could on any other piece of property where they had a home.
Any questions of Representative Richardson? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what you said, but I wonder how this differs from Measure 37 in that respect in terms of transferability. What was written into this that makes it different?
Well, we have a clause which actually says that the property can continue. If you'd like, I can turn to that and read that. Would you like me to go over the actual wording? Let's see, it's going to be on the amendment. Also, if it would please the chair, we could have Harlan Leedy join us from the Realtors. He has helped with the amendments that we have drafted for this bill to make sure that it's been cleaned up, and he is more conversant with the actual provisions. If you'd like to invite him to come forward.
Mr. Leedy. We also have an amendment to this bill that we will be addressing after we've talked about the bill. Very good. What time do you have to be in Medford, Lane?
Mr. Chair, I think I have a meeting at about 5 o'clock, for which I know I'm going to be late, but I'm speaking at 6:15, so that's my top dead.
Well, we're trying not to make that you have to shout from I-5.
Mr. Chair.
Harlan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Leedy, Senior Staff Attorney with the Oregon Association of Realtors. I do have some written testimony as well as an exhibit I would like you to consider. But
can you move the microphone over there?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. But if it's the Chair's pleasure, I can speak to the amendments before I do any of that.
Please speak to the question of Representative Anderson.
I'm sorry, Chair Garrard, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Lewis, how does this differ? How is it written differently that so that the title is free and clear after purchase and sale?
Chair Garrard, Representative Anderson, if you look to the Dash 1 amendments, we have built into it that provision I'm just scanning for it here. And line 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23 of the Dash 1 amendments, we are trying to say that a dwelling authorized by this bill would be no different from a dwelling authorized in the normal course of any other type of dwelling application, to make it clear that this dwelling that is authorized here would be a transferable permit. The land use permit that is granted would be transferable to a new purchaser.
Also, if you turn to page 2 of the proposed amendments, and the first four lines say, if a single-family dwelling is authorized under Section 3 or 4 of this 2005 Act, and in subparagraph A, the owner may convey the property with the right to build the single-family dwelling, and then a building permit issued for the dwelling is subject to the same cost, timetables, and other provisions as essentially any other building permit.
One quick question. Do you have any idea how many single family dwellings might be involved in this process?
We do not. We asked that question 2 years ago when we were considering House Bill 3315, and we were unable to get an answer from any government agency as well. From most circumstances, this will apply to properties that were purchased before 1994, because it was in 1994 that there were some substantial changes in statewide zoning laws that interfered with a person to receive a building permit that may have been able to do that before that time. Now, since this is a post-Measure 37 bill, it does not apply solely to people who lost that right because of what happened in 1994. But we do not expect that it's going to be a huge number. They had to have the property before there were changes by the government's rules and laws and so forth.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'd like to expand a little bit on that question. Do you know whether this bill would authorize any property owner who does not have a claim under Measure 37 to assert a claim under this bill? Does it spread a broader net, is what I'm asking, than Measure 37 does?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, my understanding is that it is more restrictive in that Measure 37 applied to accumulating or acquiring the property even by family members in prior generations, and this bill does not go to that extent. And so I believe it is more restrictive than Measure 37.
May I continue? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you then address the purpose for the definition you've included here in of owner? Is that not more broad than the definition of owner either in current law or under Measure 37? Looks to me like it's intended to expand those eligible, but maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Okay, let me review that for the record and then see if we can respond here. The owner under subparagraph section 2, subparagraph 3 says, owner means the record holder of fee title interest in real property, the contract purchaser of real property, or a legal entity created in whole or in part by the preceding owner to which the preceding owner transferred the fee title interest in the real property before, on, or after the effective date of this 2005 Act. Which may be the subparagraph that you're referring to. And my understanding is if an owner were to set up a family trust or to set up his own corporation or something like that, where the legal entity, the legal title would change, but it's still the same owner that it would carry forward into that new legal entity, which is an extension of the landowner himself.
Mr. Chair, maybe I'm too simple, but I didn't quite understand your response.
Okay.
Is it broader than the definition of owner in current law or under Measure 37? Maybe you're not the right person.
I'm not the right
person.
Okay. Yes.
But the director might be on notice that when it's his turn, I'd like to understand that, please.
Okay, maybe Mr. Levy can answer that.
Mr. Chair, based on my reading of 37, and I don't have it in front of me, in my recollection, this bill does not in any way provide more claimants than those people that are already eligible to file a Measure 37 claim. It does provide claims for fewer people than are already eligible under Measure 37.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, when you're ready, I could address amendments, if that would be appropriate.
Proceed. Committee members, you do have an amendment to this. Representative Richards is going to make a slight wording change in this amendment as he presents it, so that the amendment we are getting will not follow your written script for just a couple of words right in the first paragraph.
We appreciate it if you would just annotate your written copy of the proposed amendments to House Bill 2549. This is HB 2549-1. There was a minor error on line 3 that needs to be addressed. And so I'll read the first three lines of the proposed amendments. It says, on page 1 of the printed bill, line 25, after restriction, delete the rest of the line and line 26 and insert. And then the insertion presently reads, after the effective date of this 2005 Act, or enforces or applies a reinterpretation, and it should read, or enforces, comma, and then you delete the word or, so it reads, enforces, comma, applies, and then add two words, or applies, and then it goes on as written, a reinterpretation of a land use restriction. So line 3 of the amendment should read, or enforces, comma, applies, or applies a reinterpretation of a land use restriction adapted prior to the effective date of this 2005 Act. Beyond that, we had one additional addition that needs to be added, that It's just the deletion of two words, and the reason that we need to do it is because of, it's recently come to our attention that many counties view a nuisance as being anything that isn't approved under its law, and so I'd like to have you turn in the, actually on the amendment itself, if you look, if you go to page two, I'm actually looking at the amendment, and then if you go to page two, and what we want to add is merely, it'll say section 3, subparagraph 2, subparagraph, small a, and we're deleting the words under law.
Keeping the word under law.
Excuse me? I had it incorrect. We're deleting the word law or. So what the sentence is going to say is, the single-family dwelling would constitute a public or a private nuisance under common law. Okay?
The amendment.
The amendment is just going to say we're going to delete the word, the two words, law or. And so it'll just say section... Okay.
We're all lost.
I'd like to add a line onto the amendment.
Okay. What line?
The line on the amendment will be at the very end. So it's on page 2.
Okay. Line 10. Line 10.
And it's going to say section 3, parentheses, 2, parentheses small a, on line 8 of page 2 of the bill, and then it'll say delete, and then two words, so it'll say delete law or. I'm sorry to do that to you, Mr. Chair. It was just discovered that if to avoid litigation after this bill is passed, those two words need to come out.
Any questions from the committee in regards to the amendments to the amendment? Seeing none, are there any further questions for Representative Richardson in regards, or Representative Ackerman?
Or to Mr. Levy?
Or Mr. Levy,
yes,
okay.
Thank you. Primarily to Harms, I think we talked about this. Referring to page 2, section 5 at the bottom, line 43, I think the way I read the amendments, we are deleting reasonable and inserting applicable. Discussion, we construed that amendment to mean that the lot of record home that was allowed to be constructed would have to comply with applicable or existing building codes, not the building codes which existed when the lot was purchased. If that is so, that seems inconsistent with to where the law still states, or the bill still states, that the dwelling will be built in compliance with the laws that applied when the owner acquired the lot or parcel. So I still think we're not in sync about what building codes, what applicable codes would apply, those that existed when the property was purchased or those that exist when the permit's issued.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, if you look there on page 2 at line 5, it says that the owner demonstrates that except as required in section 5 of this act, the single-family dwelling will be built in compliance with the laws that applied when the owner acquired the lot or parcel. But when we go down to section 5, which is what we talked about, you are are seeing that Section 5 requires that it still be cited and with applicable citing standards for fire health and safety. So there is, it is not inconsistent. It flows together because of that except as required in Section 5. So I think what we're saying here, Section 3 of the bill is speaking, in this particular provision of Section 3.
I see it now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. It's Mr. Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I do appreciate your consideration in putting me on in time to get out the door, at least a reasonable time, to Medford.
You have 2 minutes.
I have 2 minutes. I'll probably take about that. Let me just ask Carlin, are you going to continue to testify?
Okay.
I'll be brief then, Mr. Chair. I have just now seen these amendments, and it sounds to me like there's some wordsmithing going on. I have not seen whatever amendments may be coming out. So rather than address the bill in particular, I think what I wanted to put on record was our recognition the concept of lot of record, or as I understand, Harlan may address perhaps an amendment to this at some point along the process, to tract of record as an element of a larger legislative review and consideration of the issues around Ballot Measure 37 is appropriate, and I think it belongs on the table. What the representative Richardson mentioned that perhaps this providing an off-ramp for property owners who are entitled to claims under Ballot Measure 37, give them some avenue around the swamp of the Ballot Measure 37 claims process. I think it is appropriate to look at that as an avenue of relief for them. So what I mostly want to say is just that we recognize and receive this as a concept for consideration as this moves forward. I know the Senate itself has expressed interest in this also in the Ballot Measure 37 context, so we look forward to continuing to work with the sponsors of this bill and with you, Mr. Chair, and your committee and the Senate in further refining this and how it may fit into that broader Measure 37 context.
Any questions of Mr. Shetterly?
At risk of delaying the good director, I mean, just, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Shetterly.
You proceed at your own risk.
I know. This should be easy for someone as experienced and wise as Mr. Shetterly is.
How can I say no?
I'm not familiar with the term reinterpretation as it applies to land use. Is it a common term and well understood in the law, or are we breaking new ground here with this language?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan. I think it's probably best to let Harlan testify on that. I had some discussion with him earlier about that as to what that means, and it may merit some further definition. You can look at this a couple of ways. One is a reinterpretation by a local government, let's say. There's simply been a change in administration, and so they are now interpreting an ordinance or a standard today differently than they did last year, simply because now they have someone new in charge who's going to look at the same issue differently than staff did before, or perhaps the governing body. There's another way to look at this, and that is reinterpretation that may be mandated by a court decision that says that, in fact, you are in error in your interpretation of this, and so then the reinterpretation is really driven by a directive from a court that the previous interpretation was not, in fact, consistent with law. So I think that's an area that, as this moves forward, will merit some further discussion. But again, I've already had some preliminary conversation about that with Mr. Levy, and I'm sure he'll be able to clarify his intent on that as well for your committee.
Thanks.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing none. Hit the road, Jack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you all. I'll be back tomorrow.
Harlan, would you like to continue your testimony at this time? And I'll ask Bob Raper from Multnomah County to come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, I am Harlan Levy, Senior Staff Attorney with the Oregon Association of Realtors. We had requested that this bill be drafted And we do thank Representative Richardson for bringing it forward. I also wanted to thank Representative Ackerman. We talked about some of these amendments, and several of the ideas that are in this amendment were brought to me by Representative Ackerman, and I think they improved the bill significantly. In response to Representative Nolan's question, the reinterpretation is defined in the bill on page 1, line 22, and that comes out of discussions that were had way back in 2001 after Measure 7 had passed, and there were some work groups that were meeting to discuss the impact of ballot Measure 7, and there was a proposal on the table, and one of the issues that came up was what happens if one of the situations that Director Shetterly described occurs, and you have a reinterpretation of a land use restriction that now prevents you from building a dwelling when in fact in the past it had not. So that is why we have that it's kind of a safety valve put into this bill to prevent those types of situations. So that if a local government reinterprets an old ordinance in a new way and the result is you don't get to build the dwelling, then you should be protected. That's why that's in the bill. With that, I'd like to get into the main gist of my testimony here, which speaks to the bill as a whole and some of the policy reasons behind us bringing forward this legislation for your consideration. You may hear some testimony that there already are a lot of record statutes on the books, and that is true. We do have a lot of record dwellings permitted under state law, and they're codified in the Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 215.700 through 730. And those were created back in 1993 as a result of House Bill 3661. And the purpose for that bill was to create some sort of safety valve for those landowners who really did have investment-backed expectations that were destroyed by the land use program and now found themselves in a situation where they could not build a dwelling. The problem with those statutes is the safety valve wasn't much of a safety valve. And according to the department's own numbers, between the years of 1994 and 2003, there were only a total of 970 of these lot of record dwellings approved in farm zones statewide. And then only 494 during that same nine-year period approved for forest zones statewide. That's not much of a safety valve, and as you can see, the frustration that many of these landowners have experienced has continued to build, and thus, you know, the state was faced with ballot Measure 37, which passed last November. So we believe that this frustration, this idea that for whatever reason the state of Oregon does not allow a landowner to live on his or her property, despite the fact that they purchased the property with that intention, that's one of the reasons we're in the situation we're in today. I have submitted to you a press release from the American Farmland Trust, just as an example of what some other states do. Many of you may not realize it, but I'm not a native Oregonian. I'm from upstate New York, which in many ways is very similar to Oregon. There's a lot of farming. It's an agricultural economy. And, you know, there's some very good soils in that part of the world. And yet, you know, the state of New York has never seen it fit to prohibit a person from living on their land simply because it is owned as farmland. As a matter of fact, there is not another state in the United States of America that I have found that treats farmland in the same way we do here. Many states have restrictions on subdivisions. For example, the state of Vermont has what's known as Act 250, which prohibits rural subdivisions. Yes, you're still allowed to build one house on your farmland if you want to live on your land. What I've done here is I've highlighted some particular things that interested me in this press release. And if you see what I've highlighted here, they're talking about the town of Seneca, which is in upstate New York, which contains some of the most productive agricultural soils in the entire state of New York, and arguably in the Northeast. And what they've done there is they adopted a new zoning code that they think will protect the farmland very well.
law, what they've said is you can build one house on every 50 acres. Now, the bill that we have before you today wouldn't even allow that, because we're not talking about the minimum lot size in a farm zone in this bill, which would remain 80 acres. So according to this bill, what we'd be authorizing is about one house every 80 acres, whereas in upstate New York, which also has a similar situation with, you know, people moving to the countryside and wanting to live in the country, not necessarily farmers, they've seen fit to allow one house every 50 acres. In Vermont, it's one house every 10 acres. I use these states as examples because they have some of the same pressures that Oregon faces. We have a lot of Californians that want to move to Oregon. They have a lot of New Yorkers and Bostonians that want to move to upstate New York or Vermont. I think that one of the problems we have here in Oregon is we have a very myopic way of looking at things. We've done it here in Oregon for so long, we forget that there's 49 other states that may not do it the same way that we do it here. I also wanted to point out to you that this bill is not a bill that is going to allow rural subdivisions. It is not a bill that is going to allow urban sprawl. It is a bill that will allow for one house on a legal lot of record. You heard the Director Shetterly talk about the idea of further narrowing this bill to make it one house per tract. We would see that as a reasonable compromise if that's what it takes to get the Senate to pass this bill and the governor to sign the bill. What that would mean is if you have more than one lot of record and they're all contiguous to one another, that you would still get one house, that you would treat it as one tract of record. The advantage to the landowner is they would now be able to site that house anywhere on that tract. So if one of the lots had, you know, would qualify for this and one of the lots would not, under this bill they would only be able to site the dwelling on the lot that qualified. Under the tract of record, they would be able to site it anywhere on that entire tract. We think that's a reasonable way of looking at this. I believe you will hear testimony from the representative from the Association of Oregon Counties that will concur that that would be a reasonable way to look at this. So if that amendment were to come in the Senate, we would be in support of that. I guess in conclusion, we're facing a new reality here in Oregon. You're facing ballot measure 37. The voters have spoken. They've said that there's something wrong with the program. And one of the things that we believe that has led to this is the situation where people that had investment-backed expectations that were reasonable to build a house on your land to call your home is a reasonable investment-backed expectation, as can be seen in 49 other states, and those expectations were destroyed by either an action of this legislature or by an action of LCDC or by an action of the local jurisdiction that governs that property. And we think this bill is something that, frankly, this legislature should have passed in past sessions and, had limited degrees of success. The House of Representatives passed a similar bill last session, but it saw no action in the Senate. And frankly, we probably wouldn't be in a situation we are in today if something similar to this had passed in some past session of the legislature. So in conclusion, I would ask that this committee look favorably upon this bill, adopt the amendments that Representative Richardson brought to you, and move it to the floor with DuPass recommendation. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Rubin?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. A couple clarifying questions, if I might. Mr. Levy, I think I heard you say that the definition of reinterpretation that is in this bill applies only to a government that itself, by its own initiative, chooses to interpret an ordinance or a rule differently, and it does not apply to a situation where, for example, a local government is told by a higher authority that they had got it wrong before and must enforce a different interpretation. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I don't think that's what I said, and if I did, I apologize. Reinterpretation means application of a land use restriction that differs from the established reinterpretation. And Director Shetterly mentioned a situation where a court orders a local government to interpret it differently. We would hope that that would catch this situation as well. That would be caught up in this situation.
I think I might follow this a little further.
Continue.
So if a local government, for example, a city or a county, mistakenly interprets its obligations under state law and then is told by a court that it has to enforce the law as it is, as, for example, maybe the other 35 counties are enforcing it, that would be considered a reinterpretation that triggers a right under this bill?
Chair Gerard, Representative Nolan, if the net effect of that reinterpretation would be to deny a building permit to build a single-family dwelling, I think it would. I think that it would. I think that's what that's in there for. I mean, that's one of the situations that reinterpretation language is contained in the bill.
A different question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Mr. Levy, I thought I heard, and my arithmetic may not be precise, but I thought I heard you say that about 1,300 houses were built on land similar to this, and you said that's not much of a safety valve. Since I haven't been able to get the answer, an answer to the question that Representative Gordon had asked, Representative Anderson had asked about how many properties would be affected by this. Do you have in your mind how many you hope will be affected? What's your objective? Are you trying to allow, if 1,300 isn't enough, how much is enough?
Chair Gerard, Representative Nolan, there were approximately 1,300 that had been built during a nine-year period statewide across the entire state of Oregon. We don't have a specific objective with a certain number set. Our objective in this bill is to provide landowners with some degree of relief based on their reasonable investment backed expectations. I don't have a number at hand. I don't want to make a number up. I think that you might ask some of the other witnesses how many dwellings they think would be authorized by this bill. I frankly don't know.
One final question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Levy, you talked about the 80-acre requirement now, and I want to make sure I heard you correctly. I thought I heard you say that this bill would not allow building a house on smaller than an 80-acre parcel. You said that 80-acre requirement still applied.
Chair, Representative Noah, I did not say that.
Okay.
I said the 80-acre minimum lot size would still apply under this bill. There is a mistaken belief out there, I don't know where this came from, that you're entitled to build a house if you have 80 acres of farmland. That is not the law. What the law says is the minimum lot size, the minimum lot that can be created in an AFU zone, is 80 acres. In some parts of the state, it's considered rangeland, and it's 160 acres. This bill would not change that minimum lot size. What I was saying is that in comparison to what other states have done to protect farmland, I could not find another state that had a lot size as large as 80 acres.
Mm-hmm.
The closest that I found was this situation in New York, which adopted a 50-acre minimum. But even in that situation where they have a 50-acre minimum lot size, they do allow you to build, as a matter of right, one house on your 50 acres.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When the people that decide to take this route are gone, how do you think that will affect Measure 37?
Chair Gerard, Representative Anderson, this bill is designed as a parallel route to Measure 37. It's not designed to be a replacement for 37. It is designed to give a landowner an opportunity to obtain this dwelling. Now, they, by getting this dwelling permit, would probably lose a Measure 37 claim if that claim was to, you know, seek compensation for the loss of the right to build a house. But most of these people, you will find as this committee goes on, aren't seeking compensation. They're seeking the ability to build a house to live on their land. And compensation is the only thing that's being offered to them in many cases. You know, under 37, it's 37 is written to give them a right to build in lieu of compensation. This bill would give them the right to build, so there would be no reason for them to seek that compensation once they obtained this permit.
So you don't think that it will weaken the chances of people under Measure 37 to get what they also want when all of the one homes are taken out?
Chair, I represent the interest not under this bill. I mean, they would still be able, a landowner would have an option now to pursue a house under this bill or to pursue their relief under 37. And in some cases, they could do both and see what happens. This bill is designed to provide a certain process, a certain outcome. You've heard some of the uncertainty that surrounds Measure 37. Is it a transferable right? Are local governments allowed to waive state statutes? All of the uncertainty is intended to be removed by this bill. That's what we're trying to do here. It's give them a clear path to take.
Harlan, if this bill were law, could a local government entity tell a 37 claimant, you don't need, or maybe I should reword that, deny a 37 claimant and say, you can now go this regular route, you don't need to go through the claim, the 37 process. Could a local government do that, in your opinion?
Sure, no. They would both be independent statutes. Measure 37 is a statute. This would be a statute. And the landowner would be entitled to choose which one he wanted to take.
It's the landowner's choice. They now have a choice whether to go 37 or to, if this bill were allowed to go this route, not
correct. Chair Gerard, that is correct.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Mr. Lieberman.
Thank you very much. Bob Leeper, Troutdale, Oregon. Chair Gerard, members of this committee. I bought my 24 acres in 1985. It's about half wooded and half cleared, which was the perfect property for me. I spent about a year and a half looking for it. And I'm not able to build a house on it. One of the reasons I'm not able to build a house on it is the $80,000 rule. The $80,000 rule has devastated people's lives and dreams, contributed to Oregon's economic troubles, and added to congestions on our roads. It sent the message to the next generation of farmers that unless you marry into or inherit a farm or win a multi-million dollar lottery, you are not wanted in Oregon. It may have saved some existing farmers, but it hasn't saved one single acre of farmland. What better way to ensure market share than to eliminate the competition before they can get started or make it more expensive for your competition? LCDC denied the existence of thousands of existing small farms and dreaming up this hairball idea. That alone should be sufficient reason to reject it. I'd like to build one single house on 24 acres. The county has told me that I could build greenhouses on the 11 acres, approximately tillable acres on the property, but I don't want to build greenhouses. And they've also told me I could cut the trees down if I wanted to have more tillable acreage. I don't want to cut the trees down. I bought the property for the trees to begin with. I want to build one single house on that property. Please pass this bill. Thank you very much.
Any questions of Mr. Lieber? Thank you both very much. Ms. McLaren? You are the only group to speak in opposition to this bill, so I thought I'd bring you up all by yourself so you feel comfortable. Is that setting you up? Okay, that's really bad.
Thank you, Chair. I can ask you which seat is hot.
Yeah.
sitting up. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on this bill. I hope to be able to answer some questions that the committee may have had of others, and if I fail to do so, please do let me know. As I read this bill, it authorizes a dwelling on every lot or parcel on which a land use regulation or reinterpretation prevents the construction of a dwelling that could have been acquired when the owner purchased the property. Although the bill doesn't expressly state it is essentially adding on a development opportunity, and as such authorizes a dwelling where existing county, city, or state land use regulations would not. And I think we can all agree that's sort of the intent of the bill. I'm not saying anything new here. I think, though, however, that this bill does something more than just provide a fast track or an alternative, I guess, exit was what Director Shetterly was referring it to for Measure 37 claimants. I think instead this bill actually does expand the type and number of people who are eligible for a land use waiver. It does expand the scope of what triggers a land use waiver in terms of the definition of reinterpretation, which doesn't exist within Measure 37. And I also think that it creates an additional opportunity to develop inconsistently in addition to Measure 37. And so I view this bill as an add-on. Now, that may or may not be what's how the bill ends up coming out or what the intent is of everyone in the room. Certainly Director Shetterly's comments seemed to treat this bill in context of an overall Measure 37 debate. And I think that depending upon where it's placed, there are different outcomes and different areas and opportunities for compromise. Starting with the easy or short comments first, the expanded definition of owner, what I mean by this is that in Section 1, Paragraph 3 of the bill, as Mr. Levy read to you, owner means a record holder of fee title interest in the property, a contract purchaser of real property, or a legal entity created in whole or part by the preceding owner to which the preceding owner transferred the fee title interest. On or after the date of the bill. How Measure 37 works in terms of providing waiver, it's only the current owner. So if I am Carrie McLaren and I create a partnership agreement with Carrie McLaren and I'll use my maiden name, Kirschman Development Incorporated, and I transfer the property, under Measure 37, that new corporation I don't think is entitled to a waiver under provisions of Measure 37. They may well be entitled to monetary compensation, and I think they are because that definition is written rather broadly. But if you look at the plain text of Measure 37, it defines an owner as the present owner of the property, which I read to be most likely a fee title holder of interest, and not any legal entity that it's subsequently transferred to. Probably a modest enlargement, but I just want to point that out for the committee's attention. My larger concern deals with the expanded scope of what triggers a land use waiver. As I mentioned, I do think that the definition and inclusion of a reinterpretation as a trigger for the ability to build a dwelling under this measure is both unclear and perhaps allows an opportunity to build a dwelling where one is not authorized, certainly under current law and perhaps not under Measure 37. I ran through a couple of scenarios, not wanting to name names, did County A, County B, and County C. But if, for example, County A was to receive different or better legal advice from its counsel suggesting that the county's original interpretation was incorrect as a matter of law, as I read this bill, if the county was to correct itself, it would, in effect, reinterpret a land use regulation and would give rise to the opportunity to build a dwelling under this law. I think the same standard would happen, and indeed it's happened in the past in Oregon, where certain counties have interpreted a land use law to say one thing, and that's been inconsistent with the state law. They've had an enforcement order by the Land Conservation and Development Commission or perhaps been reversed by the Court of Appeals. I think even in that circumstance, it's this definition is written broadly enough to include that type of scenario within the ambit of the definition of reinterpretation. And indeed, I think Mr. Levy indicated the intent to do so. I think that actually, far from providing some certainty for landowners, might do more to particularly when there's no definition of what it means to establish a land use interpretation. Must it be in writing? Is it something that's just contained in a decision? Is it something that's advice that's offered at the counter? It actually might lead to more uncertainty, confusion, and litigation in terms of what do we mean by reinterpretation of a land use regulation than I think certainly probably the sponsors hope. My last point concerns the creation of an additional right for land use waivers. And I really do want to underscore that we appreciate the focus of this bill on owners of farm and forest land who may have been denied the opportunity to build a dwelling when they could have, when it's established they certainly could have when they purchased the property. But 1,000 Friends thinks that payment, not waiver, is the right response and the right way to provide fairness, because in many cases, development in farm and forest lands will actually adversely affect family businesses that are operating nearby, whether they're row crop farmers, orchardists, or timber producers. While this bill does provide the option of payment, it is an unlikely option where there's no funding mechanism is identified. As this committee is aware, 1,000 Friends does support the concept of transfer development credits as a method of compensation in a way in which, in these sort of tax-restrained times, we might be able to identify and fund money for compensation to provide for fairness to landowners without adversely impacting neighboring family businesses. As I read these provisions, however, they supplement and don't substitute the waiver provisions in Measure 37. Nothing in this language requires a landowner to choose between the options in this bill or under Measure 37. And indeed, the bill expressly states that the rights granted under this bill are cumulative in addition to those afforded under Measure 37. So the neighboring farmer who's concerned about development sees a landowner come in under this bill, get an opportunity to build one dwelling, and meanwhile they file their Measure 37 claim for a subdivision as well. I think it doesn't help that the issues that are raised by Measure 37, but rather just complicates them. And then there is just sort of a structure that we're left with historically as a result of some paper-platted subdivisions that were done around the turn of the century, ancient orchard subdivisions, where indeed, if you turn to the map that I've attached to my testimony, there are some very old subdivisions that legally exist, but they have been farmed as one unit for 50, for 100 years or whatever. As this bill is written, if it's written under the lot or parcel concept rather than the tract or the ownership concept, it would allow a dwelling on each one of these parcels, which actually could be, in some areas of the state, fairly extensive development. It is very difficult. I agree with Mr. Levy and others who spoke, and I've tried to look into some of the transfer property data to get an assessment of how long have some people owned their property. I couldn't provide a clear number to this committee based on the investigation I've done of transfer of property. We do know that most resource land is held longer than, say, land inside of cities. So it's difficult to discern absolutely how many of these paper subdivisions exist out there, how many people have owned their property for that long. But I think that there is considerable concern on the behalf of farmers and timber owners who are concerned about the impacts of increased development in their industrial zone where they are working to make their money. So in conclusion, 1,000 Friends does urge you to address the issues in Measure 37, not to create additional opportunities for land use waivers that are inconsistent with existing local and state land use regulations. Insofar as this is part of the overall discussion of what to do in resolving issues of Measure 37, I'm sure that it does deserve additional attention. I'm not certain that I necessarily could support them, but I appreciate the effort going into looking at different methods. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Is there none? Seeing that, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I hope I didn't missed what you said, but a pioneer family moves to the state, holds property all the way through, and 3 years ago, because of estate purposes, has to transfer title to great-grandchildren, grandchildren, something in a legal form. You're saying they're ruled out of Measure 37, but would be or would not be entitled to this?
Chair Gerard, Representative Anderson, what I'm trying to do is to point out, I'm going to try to be more clear, distinguish between what the waiver provisions are under Measure 37 and the waiver provisions under this bill, or the opportunity to build a dwelling under this bill. Using your hypothetical, if that family were to go in and make a Measure 37 claim and grandpa had passed on the property to grandson and granddaughter, they would be entitled to compensation based on when the family owned the property, but they would not be entitled to waiving the land use regulations under Measure 37. The waiver is limited to the current owner, which would be the grandson or the granddaughter who, I'm assuming in your hypothetical, acquired the property after the implementation and enactment of the land use regulations.
My hypothetical was that they had been transferred into a trust, not necessarily to the grandchild or great-grandchild, but into a trust. Same owners, same family.
Chair Gerard, Representative Anderson, in the discussions that I've been in, people have been making, some other lawyers who are smarter about trusts than I, have been making a distinguishing between revocable trusts and irrevocable trusts and what constitutes a new entity. The best way in which I can answer your question is to say that if something constitutes a new entity, that is a change of ownership for purposes of Measure 37. If it doesn't constitute a new entity, right, then it does not constitute a change of ownership. So depending upon how that is interpreted, yes or no. Oh, that helps.
You don't, you don't consider the same people if it is a different entity legally or corporately to be the same owner.
Chair Gerard, Representative Anderson, I don't think that Measure 37 does, and I think to a certain extent House Bill 2549 does. So that's the difference between the two in my interpretation.
Any further questions? Thank you, Ms. McClain.
Thank you.
Committee members, that is a good topic, the one we just discussed, mm-hmm. and because of that, I think the authors of this bill need to go back and take a look at this bill and perhaps amend it to cover exactly Representative Anderson's question. So we're going to finish taking testimony, but we will not have a work session on this bill today. So I'll ask Art Schlack and Don Schellenberg. And it's good to see you back, Don.
Thank you, sir.
We will complete the list of those who wish to testify and make testimony on this bill.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm pleased to be here this afternoon to speak in favor of 2549. To speak in favor of the concept of a lot of record. This has been something that has been before the legislature a number of times. It has been something that has been talked about for many years. I was part of the 1993 effort that defined what is referred to as a limited lot of record, because it only applied to non-high-value lands within the state, and as we've divided agricultural lands into high-value and non-high-value farmlands in the state by definition. But it was an attempt to address part of the issue of lot of record. What you have before you is
a much better attempt, a much an attempt to provide for additional fairness, which the our association supports. I will share with you that it's been our experience receiving Measure 37 claims that a significant number of claims deal with natural resource lands, and they either deal with the request of the landowner to place a house, one house, or potentially to divide the property into maybe many, many parcels, but certainly more than the one that they have. And that is the bulk of the Measure 37 claims that we're receiving at this point. So this bill will address a major issue in a positive manner. I do not believe that that an individual would be well served to file a Measure 37 claim for a single, for a dwelling on a lot that would qualify here. There would be no reason or no need to do that. This should meet that individual's need completely. And I, in conclusion, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just note that we are discussing maybe some other alternatives or issues with Mr. Levy and Representative Richardson. We will continue to discuss those as the, you know, as the bill, if you decide to move this bill to the floor and over to the House, to the Senate, we will continue to work on those issues that we think may even make this better and address some larger scale issues at this point. So, Mr. Chair, we support House Bill 2549.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Stott? Seeing none? Oh, Representative Anderson.
That's a slow right hand.
Let me ask the question I asked before of one of the people testifying. Do you think this will diminish diminish the impact of Measure 37, leaving just some people in and taking a great number out that just want one property? What impact do you think?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think this bill, at the end of the day, will have a positive impact. It will release some of the pressure. We still have other issues that need to be attended to address some of the other problems. This does not address land divisions. It does not address the fact that there may be some land that has been misplanned and zoned. So we really need to take a look at those issues too. But if you look at the the points, the flash points in the land use system, this would be one that will significantly impact and take up and relieve some of the pressure that was the reason why we have Measure 37.
Mr. Chair. Thanks. Mr. Schlatt, could you help me find a way to be supportive of this bill by giving me, maybe not today since we're not working it today, some sense of whether what the scale of impact will be? You've heard me, you know, you've sat here and heard Representative Anderson and me both wonder, are we talking about a bread box or a house? Can you give me perhaps a lower limit on how many properties you think would be affected and an upper limit? Because I suspect most of the properties affected by this are going to be governed by county planning departments rather than cities, and I suspect you have access to that information or might be able to get at least a sense of scale, if not a precise number.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, a very difficult thing to do.
I know that.
And
but they're capable.
Thank you very much. I wish I was. I will go back into my files dealing with 2001 when we spent an awful lot of time trying to get an idea about the number of lots that are out there that a lot of record might be applicable to. This bill
And one of the things that we looked at back in 2001 is the concept of lawfully created lots or parcels. And I will just convey to the committee is that there are a lot of tax lots that have been created for a variety of purposes. So when you look at an accessor's map, you will find that there are some tax lots that exist because a farmer asked the assessor to create a separate tax lot because they were going to lease a piece of property to the farmer down the road, and they wanted a separate tax statement because as part of that lease, the farmer who was making the lease, we agreed to pay the taxes and other kinds of things. And so for those purposes, a lot was created that is not a lawfully created parcel for transfer, either through the land division's regulations or through a deed or sales contract that was purposes was the measure that we used to transfer land before we had subdivision and partition regulations in the state of Oregon that go back into the 1960s. So given those parameters, I might be able to help you with, again, a ballpark, but that's about as good, and I will try and do that, Mr. Chair and Representative Mullen.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg, representative of the Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau understands the desire of the drafters of the bill to make things simpler and efficient, and those are laudable goals. Unfortunately, land use planning has numerous facets, and it often takes time to work through these pluses or minuses of these issues. So while they want simple and fast, it's not always possible to do simple and fast, but this is the goal, I believe, of the bill. Before I get into more comments of the bill, I'd like to make clarification, at least from my perspective. This bill is not a lot of record bill. A lot of record does not have any qualifications other than that you bought it before a particular date. You owned it before 1985 and since. This bill requires that you show that you could have built the dwelling when you bought the parcel. So it's not truly a lot of record bill. It kind of looks like one in some ways, but not truly a lot of record bill. Just that clarification. Although House Bill 2549 doesn't mention Measure 37, in the end it is a Measure 37 issue. Now let me make the point that the Oregon Farm Bureau did not take a position on Measure 37, and in my comments today are in the spirit of making this a helpful bill while addressing the concerns of Farm Bureau members as they adopted the policies in our policy book. First, let me say that my sense of the bill in general is that its provisions do not allow any dwelling that would otherwise be allowed by a claim under Measure 37. And if that's not the case, please let me know and I'll quickly oppose the bill. But I think we heard earlier from Mr. Levy and others that it does not expand Measure 37. And so we take that meaning. As I studied the bill and compared it to our policies, one question came to mind. Are there adequate protections that will prevent these dwellings or their residents from having an adverse impact on Oregon's farms and ranches? To alleviate that concern, we would ask that the committee make the following conceptual amendments. And by conceptual, I mean I'm going to give you concepts here. I'm not asking you to make conceptual amendments. There needs to be a provision that runs with the deed providing that any suit alleging trespass or nuisance that is brought against farm or forest activities that are protected under the right to farm laws in ORS 3.0930 through 30.947 shall be dismissed as frivolous suit. The right to farm laws are fine and good laws, but a landowner still has to spend the time and money to defend those activities if a suit is brought against them. And if they are clearly a an accepted farming practice, then it really is only a frivolous activity if someone brings that suit against them, and that the farmer has to spend time and money to defend himself, and he should not have to do that. Also, the notification language that is required in deeds of other dwellings, noting the right to farm laws, should be required for these dwellings. Now, that may be the case, and maybe you don't have to say that for that to happen. I don't know. But in the deed, there is a notice about right to farm. You are in the farm zone, and there are going to be farming activities, and you need to be aware of that. In the same vein, there should be a provision similar to the beach access language on page 2, lines 13 through 15. And what that language essentially says is that you can build this dwelling as long as it doesn't prevent beach access. And so likewise, it should require that the dwelling not significantly increase the cost of farming in the area or significantly change farming practices in the area. In reading section 3 of the bill, the question arises regarding the number of dwellings that may be allowed. The word A on page 2, line 1, usually means one when you say a dwelling. But how many times can a person apply for a dwelling? Remember, 100 is a series of ones. So are we talking about just one dwelling, or can I keep applying for a dwelling? To clarify, we recommend that a single family dwelling be replaced with one single family dwelling, quote unquote. Another question not addressed is whether or not this dwelling is in addition to an existing dwelling on the lot or parcel. We recommend that a paragraph E be added to subsection 2, after line 17 on page 2, that says, quote, a dwelling already exists on the lot or parcel. In other words, you would not be entitled to a dwelling if one already existed on the parcel. The purpose of the bill, as I understand it, was to allow an initial dwelling where there was not one previously allowed. And finally, Section 5 of the bill addresses fire, health, and safety issues. Subsection 3 says the governing body can't impose standards that thwart the intent of the bill. It's our belief that this language is too general and that there are some important protections for farmers and ranchers that need to be added. We recommend the word or near the end of line 7 be replaced with a comma, and before the period on line 8, in other words, insert the language, add what would read, the governing body establishes that the use of the water source will cause the area to become water quality limited, or will reduce the water level of any well in the area, or the disposal of sewage will contaminate any water resource in the area. The issue here, of course, is depending how many dwellings come into an area, they could reduce the water level, the irrigation water level, or even the domestic water level of domestic wells for the existing dwellings over there. And if you get too many sewer systems in an area, you can also begin to have water quality problems in the area for the existing dwellings. And so that would be the purpose of adding this kind of language. Having seen just briefly the amendments that were proposed, I'm disturbed by the proposed amendment on page 2 of the amendments. Mr. Reedy spoke clearly about the purpose of this bill being to allow people to live on the lot or parcel they bought. Yet the proposed amendment allows the person to transfer the right to build to another person. That speaks to me of an investment, clearly, not one simply of living on the land that I bought and intended to put a house on. In my opinion, that should be a major 37 issue, not in this bill, and would urge you not to adopt that portion of the amendments. Again, Mr. Chair, our interest here is not to deny the dwellings, but to provide the important protections necessary for Oregon's farmers and ranchers and existing rural dwellings. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity, and we'll be happy to try to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Schellenberg? Seeing none, thank you, Don. Thank you, Art, very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask Mr. Levy and Representative Richardson to take the next week. I'm going to ask you to consider the testimony that's been given here today in reevaluating the bill and the amendments that are proposed. And I'm going to put you on the schedule for a week from today to bring this bill back, hopefully amended to the point where we'll answer some of the questions that were raised here today. Mr. Levy is acknowledging that. I thank you for that. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2549, and we will adjourn the House Committee on Land Use.